Victory or death!
Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Rudin, the voice of freedom behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, bringing you the Patriots the information you need to stay in the fight to preserve your liberty. This is episode 22-24, the 24th episode of 2022. Where have I been? I think it's been 2 weeks since my last podcast. Well, that's what happens when you fall off a ladder, get a concussion, lose 30 minutes of consciousness, and get taken to the hospital. Yep, unfortunately, that happened to me. Thankfully, I have no neurological damage, and they did a CT scan, EEG, brought the neurologist in, and said, everything looks good, you can go home. So I did mess my back up really bad. I actually landed on my drill, which was on my tool belt. The funny thing is, I've done so many stupid things on ladders over the years, and I always thought these rules were dumb. I thought, oh, you know, come on. Don't stand on the next to the top step. Well, then what's it there for? And don't stand on the top step. I mean, I was doing that all the time for years. I was three steps up when I fell off this dumb thing. I wasn't even doing anything dangerous. I don't even know how it happened. Because the last thing I remember, my arms up in the air, ceiling tiles flying everywhere, and then I woke up in an ambulance. You know, I will say, I was in Roanoke working at the time, so I got to go to Carilion Clinic, and they're awesome. I love that ER. If I get a choice, and I'm halfway between either one, I'm like, take me to Carilion. Oh my God. They are so happy there. It's weird. The staff just seems happier about what they do, and just seems to enjoy their jobs better, and it was a great experience. Not, of course, being injured, not being out of work, being essentially... I can't bend over or lift anything right now without it hurting really bad. So I'm on workman's comp until the doctor clears me. And the company is holding my job, looking out for me. So that's awesome. And need me back. It's funny, you don't realize how needed you are in your job until you're not at your job when you should be at your job. And then you get back and have to clean up all the things that didn't get done or weren't able to get done because you're the only one that can do them. So it's nice to be needed. Let's talk about a couple different things today in this episode. The ATF is at it again. You know, this always happens when communists take over. They release the hounds, the bureaucrats. And the bureaucrats make up their own rules and do whatever the heck they want. The ATF has been chomping at the bit to actually... infringe on the rights of gun owners, because that's what they love doing best. And so now they're knocking on doors and somehow getting lists of things like that you bought a solvent trap. How they found that out, I don't know. Maybe they raided that company, seized all their records, and are now fishing for information. Just if you didn't know, a solvent trap is essentially a backdoor way of getting a suppressor. It's a suppressor without the hole in the end. Not hard to put the hole in the end, and then you've got a suppressor. Now, it's not as good as a brand name suppressor, removable core, and all that fancy stuff, but you can. There's various iterations of a solvent trap, and the idea is that you pour solvent down the barrel, and it catches it. It traps the solvent. It's an end run around the rules, which I'm okay with. But now, the ATF is knocking on doors. Knock, knock, knock. Hey, we're just checking in because we see that you got this, and we're wondering if we could take a look, and we're going to fish and see if you're stupid enough to say yes. And unfortunately, a lot of gun owners are. Many aren't, and a lot have gotten wise to the game over the years that the ATF is up to and the FEBs. But still, there are plenty, I'm sure, that this works on. Well, I've got nothing to hide. I didn't break any laws. Until you find out that, oh, wait, the hole at the end of it, you know what I mean? I'm not actually allowed to use this as a suppressor? Really? Oops, I guess I committed a felony and now I'm going to jail. Oh, and here's all these other things that I'm sure that they'll find as they're rummaging through my whole entire house if I was dumb enough to let them in. That's what they do. So they show up at your door and they have a warrant. Okay. Don't cooperate. Don't let them into your safe. Yes, they're going to destroy it. Just continue to say, I don't consent to communist tyranny. I don't consent. Because they're going to lose this battle in the courts. Here's the other thing. They're going after certain types of triggers. There's a forced reset trigger that allows you to shoot faster. It's very similar in the speed at which you can shoot to the binary trigger, although it's completely different. So in any case, regardless, don't answer the door. It's the same rule with the feds of any kind. But if ATF, EPA, game warden, whoever, come back with a warrant, I'm not talking to you. I'm not answering your questions. I'm not opening my door. Oh, we just need to clear some stuff up here, sir. Oh, yeah, you and the four guys out there, get out of here. Get off my property. You're trespassing. It's that simple. Don't answer questions. You know, they're federal agents. They could just say, well, he lied to us. He committed a crime. Give me a break. So be smart. Don't be a stupid patriot. Be a smart patriot. I had a great time at a USPSA competition. United States Practical Shooting Association is it's like IDPA. If you've never done a competition, I would highly recommend you go do it. It's great training. That's why I go. I kind of like to measure myself amongst all the competitors and say, okay, well, how am I doing? I usually come in middle of the pack. There are some guys that are amazing. This one guy is actually a Danville police officer, and he always comes in first and second place no matter what. Sometimes he'll switch to revolver because he's bored, and he'll still come in first and second place. He's a really good shooter. And there's other guys that have spent all this money. They've got the $2,000 race gun, you know, all the gear, the jersey, the whole, like, shebang, right? They look like race car drivers. And they can't hit the broadside of a barn. They're shooting super fast. Their scores stink. It's just kind of funny to watch. So the reason I went was my 15-year-old is really quite good. And I thought, this would be fun to go do something with him. And so that's what we did. We went and did this. It was back in August. And he did an amazing job. And it was fun. I was at the end of the thing pointing out. I was like, first time. There was one. Here's the thing, though. He missed. There were a few stages that were quite technical and challenging. And so if you hadn't done one-handed shooting, switching hands, one-handed shooting left and right hand, that, you know, and misses, they're big time screw up your score. But on the large stage, the one that had, 20 targets or so, I mean, he crushed it. Just that one stage, I mean, he nailed it. So I'm really excited to be doing this with him. He's a natural shooter. I have had to work to be competent at shooting, and he is naturally able to just pick up any gun and just shoot it. So that's kind of cool. And having a good time. I would highly recommend that you do IDPA or USPSA. USPSA, the Practical Shooting Association, is a little more fun, a little more targets, a little more scenario-based as far as, you know, it's like an old Wild West setup or something, you know. But it's a mix of steel and swingers and Texas stars and a lot of really cool technical things. IDPA is a little more scenario-based in that it's gangbangers or, like, trying to ambush you at the park and stuff like that, and you have to hide behind a tree or this other form of cover and shoot them. And if your toe sticks out, that's points against you and stuff like that. It really depends where you're doing it. Sometimes they're not that strict, but I don't really stress about that because that's not why I'm there. I'm there to get the opportunity to shoot in a scenario-based thing and just shoot targets and see how I do. And I stack myself up against myself. So I look at all the previous times that I've competed and go, okay, well, how did I do this time and compared to that time? It's like golf. You know, when you're shooting, it's all you. It's not the golf ball's fault. It's not the club's fault. It's not the gun's fault or the ammo's fault. It's your fault that you can't hit the broadside of a barn. One exception to that could be that it's your gun is just mismatched to you. You know, if you've got really small hands and you've got some big, beefy 45, you know, a Glock, well, it might be time to switch to something else. But other than that, it's probably you. And you know it. And you can keep telling yourself it isn't. Keep blaming all these things. Well, it's not my fault. It's the golf cart today. Okay. I'd like to thank Adam Hopkins for sponsoring this segment of the show. Adam Hopkins is a real estate broker in Forest, Virginia, serving the entire area. If you were to take a big circle and draw probably 50 miles around it, it's pretty much the area he's covering. And if you're looking for a solid Patriot broker and real estate company in that region, then get in touch with Adam and his team at adamhopkins.net, H-O-P-K-I-N-S, adamhopkins.net, and he'll take good care of you. And you can be part of starting that parallel economy where patriots support patriots. All right, next up is the doctrine of the lesser magistrates. I've been going over different stuff here with the this book, which I highly recommend you get. You can find it in the show notes at radiofreevirginia.com. But I think this is, if you look at this from a standpoint of we don't want to have to do patriot stuff, this is how, right here. You know, finding a way that we can push back and have others in the system that is in place push back. And also, moreover, I think understanding our place in this world from a government standpoint. They are not our rulers. We are theirs, especially in America. It's this way the world over. Doesn't even matter. You know, you live in a country where a warlord is in charge. It doesn't matter. You have rights as a human being, natural God-given rights. But in America, you're sovereign. You're the ruler. You're the Lord. You're the king. And these people that are up there in Washington or up in Richmond or even in your local community, they serve you. They're your servants. But the point is that when the founders created this country, there were no king. There was no more king. And they made it plain and clear that we are in charge. The entire system was turned on its head. Where it was from top to bottom, now it's from bottom to top. The author is making the biblical argument that we do not have to obey evil rulers and people going contrary to the contract that they've made with us. That would be the Constitution. And we don't have to go contrary with God's law when they say, hey, you have to only have this many kids, so you have to abort your kid. That's like they do in China, right? And actually, interestingly, China is having a huge, as a side note, China's having a huge population problem because of this thing. They have too many men and not enough women because they have been aborting their female population. It's really interesting, all the demographic things that are going on over there. And they have their own problems. You know what people do when they have problems? Usually start a war. So just keep ready for that. Rooted in Interposition, Chapter 2. The doctrine of the lesser magistrates is rooted in the historical biblical doctrine of interposition. Interposition is that calling of God which causes one to step into the gap, willingly placing oneself between the oppressor and his intended victim. Interposition is demonstrated when someone or some group interposes or positions themselves between an oppressor and the intended victim. This can be done verbally or physically. The lesser magistrate demonstrates that the doctrine of interposition by placing himself between the tyrant or bad law and the people. When Petronius defied Caligula, he was performing an act of interposition as a lesser magistrate on behalf of the Jews. To demonstrate his act of interposition, Petronius actually called the Jews to meet with him at Tiberias. When the Jews arrived, they were horrified to see Petronius' army, two legions, assembled before them. The Jews stood on one side, while the army stood on the other. Petronius stepped between them. He then informed the Jews that his army was assembled under the authority of Emperor Caligula, who had ordered the army to war against and destroy them if resistance was made, to having the image placed in the temple. But then Governor Petronius went on to say, "Yet I do not think it just to have such a reward to my own safety and honor as to refuse to sacrifice them, his own safety and honor, for your preservation, who are so many in number, and endeavor to preserve the regard that is due your law, which, as it has come down to you from your forefathers, so do you esteem it worthy of your utmost contention to preserve it. Nor with the supreme assistance and power of God will I be so hardy as to suffer your temple to fall into contempt by the means of the imperial authority. I will therefore send to Caligula and let him know what your resolutions are, and will assist your suit as far as I am able, that you may not be exposed to suffer on account of the honest designs you have proposed to yourselves. And may God be your assistant, for his authority is beyond all the contrivances and power of men." Governor Petronius illustrated his interposition by standing between the emperor's soldiers and the Jews. He took a stand between the unjust law and the people. The interposition of the lesser magistrate requires a willingness to risk personal security for the sake of justice. Such risk is paramount to the lesser magistrate doctrine. Scripture and history are loaded with acts of interposition. In Exodus chapter 1, Pharaoh ordered that all male Hebrew newborns should be killed by the midwives. The midwives refused to do so, and even employed deceit to cover their refusal to comply with his order. They interposed on behalf of these helpless babies and stood in defiance of tyranny. In 1 Samuel chapter 14, King Saul made a foolish decree during a fierce battle, stating, "Cursed is the man who eats any food until evening, before I have taken vengeance on my enemies." His son Jonathan had not heard it and ate some honey. Saul was going to have him killed for eating it. But the scripture says, "All the peoples came to his defense and interposed on behalf, declaring, 'Shall Jonathan die, who has accomplished this great deliverance in Israel? Certainly not. As the Lord lives, not one hair of his head shall fall to the ground, for he has worked with God this day.' So the people rescued Jonathan, and he did not die." In the 4th century, the churchman, Ambrose, interposed on behalf of righteous men when he blocked the doors of the church to refuse Emperor Theodosius entry. Theodosius had unjustly killed 7,000 people in Thessalonica as reprisal for certain men in the city having killed some Roman officers. Ambrose stood in the doorway of the church and denied the emperor access until he publicly repented and made restitution. Theodosius did repent and made restitution for his actions. A recent example of interposition in history is the Romanian Revolution of 1989. The revolution actually began in the city of Timisoara, where Laszlo Tokes was the pastor of a Reformed church. The Securate, secret police, came to arrest the pastor, a common occurrence in Ceausescu's Romania. Many of those arrested were never heard from again. The people of the church learned of the pastor's impending arrest and gathered to blockade the doors of the church to interpose on his behalf and resist his arrest. The secret police sent to arrest Laszlo Tokes were accustomed to compliance. When the people blocked the doors, they were stunned by these actions and merely parked their car down the street to wait the people out. As word spread, however, more and more people arrived to blockade access to the pastor. Within a few days, more than 1,000 people had surrounded the church and would not leave. News of this spread to other areas, and a nationwide revolution broke out. 2 weeks later, Ceausescu and his wife lay dead on the palace steps. Their two-decade reign of terror was brought to an end. In America, an example of interposition took place in the late 1980s and the early 1990s, when tens of thousands of people were arrested at abortion clinics for blockading the doors, interposing on behalf of the helpless preborns threatened with a brutal death. When the press questioned the legitimacy of such acts, they were informed by those involved that they were simply practicing the historical Christian doctrine of interposition. When it comes to the interposition of the lesser magistrate, he interposes for the people as a whole, placing himself between the unjust laws or decrees of the higher authority and the people. He also acts in defense of the rule of law. Daniel did this when Daniel refused to obey the immoral decree of King Darius not to pray for 30 days. He not only acted as an individual follower of the Lord, but also in his capacity as a lesser magistrate. Remember, Daniel was one of three governors directly under Darius. Daniel took an open stand in defiance of this unjust law. The scripture says that when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. Notice he knew of the unjust law. His windows were open to all who could see his noncompliance with the law. He knelt down on his knees so no one could mistake his defiance of the law, and he did it 3 times in 1 day to assure he would be seen. For his act of interposition, Daniel was then thrown into the lion's den, willing to jeopardize his own life on behalf of the people as a whole, and to stand in defense of God's law and righteousness. Fortunately for Daniel, he lived to tell the story, as the rest is well-known history. The lesser magistrates act as a buffer for the people, placing themselves between the unjust laws or decrees of the higher authority and the people. Historical American jurisprudence recognizes that the doctrine of the lesser magistrates is rooted in the doctrine of interposition. Black's Law Dictionary defines interposition as the doctrine that a state, in the exercise of its sovereignty, may reject a mandate of the federal government deemed to be unconstitutional or to exceed its powers delegated to the federal government. The concept is based on the 10th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, reserving to the states powers not delegated to the United States. Not surprisingly, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled to reject the doctrine of interposition, though the particular case in which they did so was justified. Expressly delegated powers should not have been ruled against completely as they were in this case. The higher authority always wants to squelch any and all resistance to its authority. America's founders, however, understood that acts of interposition were not dependent upon favorable rulings by the higher authority. The founding of our nation was an act of interposition by lesser magistrates, the Declaration of Independence being the pinnacle. The legislatures of the colonies sent delegates to comprise the First and Second Continental Congress. They represented the colonies. They were magistrates. The declaration they wrote cited the offenses and tyranny of the upper tier of British government, King George, and the Parliament. This was especially necessary in light of the fact that the Parliament had no legitimate authority in the colonies because the colonies had been established by charters from the kings of England and were represented by their own legislatures. No taxation without representation referred to the fact that the colonies, unlike other realms of the British Empire, had no representation in Parliament and wanted none. But like the federal bureaucracies of today, Parliament had gradually assumed one power after another over a period of many decades, usurping authority from colony and king alike, often with the connivance of both king and Parliament, thus becoming an overarching oppressor of the colonies. Patrick Henry, when he gave his famous "Give me liberty or give me death" speech, underscored the tyranny of England's Parliament, the hardened response of King George, and the need for the Continental Congress to interpose on behalf of the people. Henry stated, "Sir, we have done everything that we have done to avert the storm which is now coming. We have petitioned, we have remonstrated, we have supplicated, we have prostrated ourselves before the throne, and have implored its interposition to arrest the tyrannical hand of the ministry and Parliament. Our petitions have been slighted, our remonstrances have produced additional violence and insults, our supplications have been disregarded, and we have been spurned with contempt from the foot of the throne. In vain, after these things, may we indulge the fond hope of peace and reconciliation." Patrick Henry and his speech became famous precisely because he was a lesser magistrate in the Virginia legislature, the House of Burgesses. The common people rallied to the revolt of this lesser magistrate when he stood up and spoke. Such interposition of the lesser magistrate provides action by duly constituted lawful authority. When individuals see immoral or unjust actions become law and policy in their nation, they desire to see the injustice corrected. The interposition of lesser magistrates provides the strength needed to resist tyranny and acts as a buffer for the common man, who might be persuaded to resist unlawful encroachments alone and by his own strength. So what it comes down to and what he's saying there is that authority is delegated from somewhere through law and through from God for various places and reasons, but it's only delegated to be non-tyrannical. It's delegated to provide order. And he'll talk more about that as the book progresses, but it's our job to push back. And there are lots of ways in America that we can push back. There's the soapbox, the jury box, the ballot box, and the cartridge box. And eventually you run out of those other options. I think we're probably there. I think we've been there for a while, but yet no one's doing anything. And if you remember in my last podcast, I said, I wonder what is going on. Has some key amount of people died in COVID or something? And I don't think that's it. I think that a key amount of leaders have retired, have gone away, have seen the writing on the wall, and they said, I don't want anything to do with this. And they've left. I'll give you an example. My father was a multi-billion dollar defense proposal manager. Well, he's not in that field anymore. He's retired. He knew what he was doing. And less people now know what they're doing. And if you look at this world that we live in right now and you wonder, why is this falling apart? Why doesn't this work? Why can't the airline get people from point A to point B? It's because they don't have leaders and they're leading by flowchart. Well, the flowchart says I have to bump this person to the next available flight. Okay, so he's bumped. Moving on. That's not customer service. Customer service would be, I'm going to have to bump you from this flight. Here's a voucher. Go on whatever airline you can find and get a flight and we'll pay for it. Customer service is when they cancel your connecting flight, say down to Charlotte like they did to my wife, you get a refund for that connecting flight section. Well, that we got a refund, but it was a fraction of what that flight actually would have cost if we bought just that flight. But because they're leading from flowcharts, you can't argue with them. And they've built all these systems in place now everywhere that essentially everything's broken, but there's nothing you can do about it. There's nobody to call, nobody to argue with. What are you going to do? I mean, you have to fill out a form. There's nobody to call. You can't argue about this. And even if you could get somebody on the phone, they're going to pull out their flowchart and say, well, what has my boss told me I can do today? They're not empowered to lead. And those people that are being advanced into positions of leadership don't know how to lead. They're not being trained how to lead. And that's why everything's falling apart. And it's not just liberals. It's conservative organizations. It's businesses. It's everywhere you look, this is happening. So if you can be a leader and lead, if you can be allowed to lead, you can do well. But that's tricky. Are you going to be allowed to lead? That's the question. I don't know. But I think that's what's going on. I don't think it's a key number of people. If anything, we have more people now than we ever have because of COVID. People are cooped up, cranking out babies. I think we just surpassed or are about to surpass 8 billion people on the planet. There's no shortage of humans. There's a shortage of leaders, people willing to stand up and interpose and say, this is wrong. I'm not doing this. We're going to do it this way. But we don't have that. You don't have it in your church. You don't have it in your government. You don't have it in your businesses surrounding you. Everywhere you go, customer service stinks. It's all broken. And it's a lack of leadership. Jocko Willink, if you listen to his podcast, he talks about leadership a lot. And it's kind of his thing, you know. And he says that if these were natural things you were born with, he wouldn't have best-selling books. He wouldn't be able to go and talk about leadership and train people about how to be leaders because you couldn't learn this. This is something only you're born with. But this continues to be something that has to be relearned and retrained, and we're not doing that at all right now. The guy in charge of monkeypox is a homosexual. Kind of where the problem's coming from, guys. Don't think he's going to be able to solve the problem. All the people in charge of everything are a bunch of nut jobs right now. And I think that's why things are the way they are and why the center isn't holding, why it's all breaking down. There's nobody to lead. And maybe you're the one. Maybe you're the one that needs to lead. Whatever it is, you know, whether it's your business or your community or whatever, maybe it's your turn to lead. Just remember, now is the time to make that list of collaborators in your local community. Who knows when that'll come in handy. All right, let's look at this funny letter. Funny but true that I received. A young woman was about to finish her first year of college. Like so many others her age, she considered herself to be very liberal, and among other liberal ideas, was very much in favor of higher taxes to support more government programs. In other words, redistribution of wealth. She was deeply ashamed that her father was a rather staunch conservative, a feeling she openly expressed, based on the lectures that she had participated in and the occasional chat with a professor. She felt that her father had, for years, harbored an evil, selfish desire to keep what he thought should be his. One day, she was challenging her father on his opposition to higher taxes on the rich and the need for more government programs. The self-professed objectivity proclaimed by her professors had to be the truth, and she indicated so to her father. He responded by asking how she was doing in school. Taken aback, she answered rather haughtily that she had a 4.0 GPA and let him know that it was tough to maintain, insisting that she was taking a very difficult course load and was constantly studying, which left her no time to go out and party like other people she knew. She didn't even have time for a boyfriend and didn't really have many college friends because she spent all of her time studying. Her father listened and then asked, "How is your friend Audrey doing?" She replied, "Audrey is barely getting by. All she takes are easy classes, she never studies, and she barely has a 2.0 GPA. She's so popular on campus. College, for her, is a blast. She's always invited to all the parties, and lots of times she doesn't even show up to class because she's too hungover." Her father asked his daughter, "Why don't you go to the dean's office and ask him to deduct 1.0 off your GPA and give it to your friend who only has a 2.0? That way you will both have a 3.0 GPA, and certainly that would be fair and equal distribution of your hard-earned GPA." The daughter, visibly shocked by her father's suggestion, angrily fired back, "That's crazy! How would that be fair? I worked really hard for my grades. I've invested a lot of time and a lot of hard work. Audrey has done next to nothing toward her degree. She played while I worked my tail off." The father slowly smiled, winked, and said gently, "Welcome to the conservative side of the fence. If you've ever wondered what side of the fence you sit on, this is a great test. If a conservative doesn't like guns, he doesn't buy one. If a liberal doesn't like guns, he wants all guns outlawed. If a conservative is a vegetarian, he doesn't eat meat. If a liberal is a vegetarian, he wants all meat products banned for everyone. If a conservative is down and out, he thinks about how to better his situation. A liberal wonders who's going to take care of him. If a conservative doesn't like a talk show host, he switches channels. Liberals demand that those they don't like be shut down. If a conservative is a non-believer, he doesn't go to church. A liberal non-believer wants any mention of God and Jesus silenced. If a conservative decides he needs health care, he goes about shopping for it or may choose a job that provides it. A liberal demands the rest of us pay for his. If a conservative reads this, he posts it. A liberal will delete it because he's offended." It's a great argument. I don't know if it would work real well. I think it perfectly illustrates the point about redistribution, and would be maybe a good place to go if you've got any little communists in training coming out of the college educational system, or even the government educational system. Before I get to the next section of the show, I'd like to thank ActiCare of the Blue Ridge, ACTIKARE.com/blue-ridge. ActiCare is in-home senior care for your senior loved one. If you can't be there, get in touch with John and his team, and they will take good care of your family member. Whether you're located in Smith Mountain Lake, Bedford, Roanoke, Lynchburg, Amherst, out in the country, get in touch with them, ACTIKARE.com/blue-ridge. This is from Soviet Life. Something you could have subscribed to if you were back in the 60s would only cost you $6, which I think is like, I don't know, today's money. Let's see, what would that be? $6 for 12 months? Probably, I don't know, today's money would probably be about $10 a month. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you can go to a movie for a nickel back then, right? So, yeah. All right, this is called The Way We Live. And it's got a picture of a guy in his 40s with gray hair, Vyacheslav Koptev, the worker. Vyacheslav Koptev is a 45-year-old steel smelter at the SERP Molot Metallurgy Plant in Moscow. He and I belong to the same generation. People in our age group are sometimes called war babies, meaning that our generation coincided with the war against Hitler Germany. The war deprived many of us of our fathers and took away the childhood of many more. Well, I wonder how much of that actually was your own country gunning down your parents because they tried to retreat. I mean, that could have been something to do with it. I don't know. But let's speak now, not of the war, but of the past 5 years. How did the five-year plan period start for me? Koptev asked. Why, at the New Year's dinner table, of course. As usual, the whole Koptev family had gathered to see in the new year. The family is large. Vyacheslav, his wife Valentina, his eldest son Mikhail, the second oldest Alexander, and the third Vyacheslav Jr., and the youngest little Arina. There were also two grandmothers, Koptev's own mother and his mother-in-law. It was a bit crowded, living together like that, but they were all great friends. They knew that Koptev's mother was just about to get her own apartment. Her turn was coming up on the wait list for tenants. The only one who protested was Arina, who wailed at the thought of Granny going away to live somewhere else. In general, the new year promised quite a few changes. Mikhail was graduating from secondary school. Have you made up your mind where you want to go after graduation? Koptev asked his son. To the plant or to higher school? To the plant, Mikhail answered. Do you think you might change your mind and go to an institute after all? His mother asked hopefully. No, I'm going to the plant, repeated Mikhail, and added, later on we'll see what happens. That was how 1976, the first year of the 10th five-year plan, began for Vyacheslav Koptev. An improvement program was starting at the plant. It was being switched over to the production of high-quality steel from electric arc furnaces. Koptev, who was deputy to Moscow City Soviet and a member of the plant's party committee, realized the necessity for the changeover. The open hearth shop was being shut down for the sake of keeping the sky over Moscow clean. And Koptev, a member of the Moscow City Soviet Commission on Environmental Protection, should have rejoiced at the improvement, yet somehow he felt no joy. And the nearer the last day came, the sadder he grew. After all, he had worked at the open hearth shop for almost 20 years. The plant management, the party, and the trade union committee had worked out a detailed program for transferring the open hearth shop workers to other shops. Not a single one of them, not even the cleaning woman in the shop canteen, would be left without a job. None would get lower wages, yet Koptev couldn't get over this feeling of sadness. The history of his old work collective was coming to an end. There was, however, nothing to be done about it. With every new step forward, we also lose something. On May 19, 1976, the last smelting was made. Several days later, Vyacheslav Koptev came to the plant with Mikhail. So as not to disappoint his mother, the boy took his entrance exams for the Steel Institute but failed to pass. Several years later, he did enroll in the correspondence department of the institute. Koptev took his eldest son on a tour of the plant and showed him the new shop, where he was already working on an electric furnace as an assistant steel smelter. The new technology called for new know-how, so Koptev was obliged to work at a lower grade for a while. Where do you want to work? He asked his son after a tour was over. I'd like to be an assistant steel smelter, Mikhail answered. You're too young for that. You can only work as an assistant only after turning 18, the father replied. So pending his 18th birthday, Mikhail Koptev took a job at the plant's central laboratory. It goes on for quite a while, and it's all about smiles and happiness, and what a great thing it is to be a hard-working worker at the steel factory. Smiles and family pictures and a small house with a plot of land that they live on. How great it is to be a Soviet. Oh, this is funny. There's an update at the end of the article. It says, in the meantime, reconstruction has been continuing at the plant. A machine for continuous pouring of steel is, by the way, to be installed in the shop where Koptev Sr. and Koptev Jr. work. It will improve the quality of the metal and ease working conditions. This machine was made to order in Italy. I love that. I'll keep going. To get an idea of how such machines function, Koptev went to the metallurgy plant in Verona. The Italian metalworkers proved to be pleasant and hospitable people. They eagerly vied with each other for the pleasure of treating him to wine and showing him all over the plant and the city. 5 years isn't a long period of a man's life, but when that man is indifferent to everything around him, when he has a taste for life, when he is not merely living through his years, but actually molding them himself, then is it really a long time? What was funny about that when I read that was that they can't, you know, supposedly Russian innovation, right? So supposed Russian innovation, and we're amazing. We're the amazing Russians. Look at us. Look how great we are. And they can't even figure this out themselves. They actually go to Italy and buy a piece of equipment that they put in their plant from Italy. It's because there's no innovation in the Soviet state. Frankly, the Kalashnikov was an amazing innovation that I don't know how it happened. Probably enough people got shot along the way that it finally took place. But there's no innovation in the Soviet state. And I love this. You know, it's like, is 5 years really that long of a time when you're working for a goal? Well, I guess not. I guess not. Lots going on in the world. Have you seen all these people talking about Ukraine again? Oh, we're going to give them more money. Oh, what chance do they have against the big bad Russians? Well, what chance did, what chance did a bunch of dudes wearing skirts have against the Russians back in Afghanistan in the 80s? What chance indeed? I don't know. The other thing is, did you see any of Bumble's speech recently with the big red background? Remind you of anything? It reminded me of something. You know what it reminded me of? V for Vendetta. Instantly when I saw it, I just went V for Vendetta. And it was very totalitarian, you know, shaking his fists in anger. Not really sure what I'm angry about. They told me I'd get ice cream when this was done. All we can do is laugh, you know, corporations are running this country. It sure as heck isn't that old doddering fool. Now is a great time. I know inflation makes this tough, but now is a great time to prepare for whatever's coming. At the very least, you should have some food stored up. But yeah, be prepared. Don't freak out, you know, just live your life. But I'm saying you need to move forward with your life, but you got to prepare. Remember, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. I'm Hank Reardon. This is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.